5 Reasons Why Bitcoin is Doomed. CEO and founder of Gab, Andrew Torber, recently posted a blog explaining the value of the cryptocurrency Bitcoin. He explains how he was blacklisted from major banks and has only been able to trade using Bitcoin, which he has dubbed free speech money. Although Bitcoin has helped Gab stay online, it has some serious flaws you need to be aware of. If you're unfamiliar with the substantial defects of centralized banking, legalized usury, and fractional reserve lending, I encourage you to go through the Banking 101 video series by Positive Money in the show notes and watch the documentary The Money Masters before continuing. Only when you see the evils of the fiat currencies, the dollar, the euro, the pound, will you appreciate what cryptocurrencies are seeking to achieve. Bitcoin is not the current solution to replace fiat currencies, and here are 5 reasons why. 5 massive problems with Bitcoin. Why do you think there are so many different cryptocurrencies, or altcoins as they're called? Visit coinmarketcap.com and you can see all of the different coins listed there. The reason for so many of these coins is because Bitcoin has foundational problems that the other coins have tried to address. These 5 massive problems mean that Bitcoin will eventually completely die out, and you need to be aware of every single one. Number 1. Bitcoin is surveillance money. When you open a fiat bank account, you have to hand over your most personal information, your ID, date of birth, address, etc. This means that it is impossible to spend fiat electronically without the bank or government knowing what you are doing and which locations you frequent. Unless you only deal in cash, there is no way around this. Bitcoin was an attempt to create an electronic person-to-person exchange of value with no need for private centralized banks that get special favors and bailouts from corrupt governments. Bitcoin was supposed to be digital cash. You can read about the intent of Bitcoin from the original white paper published by a pseudonymous person or group called Takoshi Nakaratu in 2008, Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. However, Bitcoin is not free speech money, it is surveillance money. This is because the ledger of transactions, or the blockchain, is completely public. Anyone can see all the transactions that are happening and what you have sent and received. Visit blockchain.com and you'll see the public Bitcoin block ledger. From here, you'll be able to see how many Bitcoins a particular wallet has. For example, when Theranos purchased Gab Pro with Bitcoin, we were able to track the transactions and notice that they had not spent the Bitcoin since we had given it to them. If this data is ever connected to your location or shopping habits, such metadata could be used to identify you, leaving you in a position no safer than if you had simply used fiat currencies that are directly connected to your address and personal identity. Most people obtain Bitcoin today through a middleman exchange such as Binance or Coinbase, which require you to upload documents that personally identify you. This means that your pseudo-anonymous wallet ID or Bitcoin address is then directly traceable back to you. This all means that Bitcoin is a liability as it exposes the quantity of your assets, which could make you a target for criminals or cause vendors to charge you premiums for services or goods. It also leaves you open to nefarious organizations or governments who want to track your spending habits. Number 2, Bitcoin has large processing fees. You'll notice that if you acquire some Bitcoin, you'll simply lose an enormous amount of it by transferring it. This means that Bitcoin is impractical for small purchases like buying eggs from your local farmer. Ethereum seeks to combat this with low transaction fees, however it suffers from the same exposed ledger as Bitcoin. The processing fees and time will eventually become larger and larger as fewer Bitcoins enter and traverse the blockchain. Bitcoin will be used to only transfer large amounts of capital and will not be a cryptocurrency that can be used for everyday use. Number 3, Bitcoin is monopolized by Chinese mining farms. With the prevalence of large mining farms that use expensive and specialized computing hardware, known as ASIC, Bitcoin is practically impossible to mine with consumer hardware. This also means that the decentralized nature of Bitcoin can be monopolized by large mining pools, which could in turn control the major flow of Bitcoins or greatly increase transaction fees. This gives exchanges such as Binance leverage over individuals who want to participate in the Bitcoin economy, where they have to forfeit their anonymity while paying service charges to receive any Bitcoin. China has recently cracked down on Bitcoin mining, and the impact of this on the global Bitcoin economy is yet to be seen. Number 4, Bitcoin has a limited supply. There's a limited supply of Bitcoin. This might seem like an advantage as it does not suffer from arbitrary inflation like the fractional reserve system of private centralized banking, However, even with a limited supply of the shekel in the Old Testament, a 50-year jubilee in Leviticus 25 was used to reset the economy and destroy monopolies, with an additional economic feature of a 7-year release of debts, which is found in Deuteronomy chapter 15. Bitcoin is in danger of dying because there will come a time when there remains no incentive for miners to obtain Bitcoin, as there is none left to discover on the blockchain. Without planned economic resets or new coins in the economy, the threat of monopolies and hyperinflation of Bitcoin is inevitable. Number 5. Bitcoin is not fungible. Fungibility is a term used in currencies to mean that there is value equality between equal amounts of currency. Bitcoin does not solve this problem, as there are two types of Bitcoin in the economy: virgin or clean Bitcoins and criminal or dirty Bitcoins. Let's say you provide a service and are paid in Bitcoin. You then transfer this newly acquired Bitcoin to an exchange where you hope to trade it for a currency you can buy groceries with. All of a sudden, your exchange account is closed and all your Bitcoin you transferred is held by the exchange indefinitely, with the government now knocking on your door. Since the Bitcoin ledger is 100% transparent, an AI was able to determine that the Bitcoins you acquired for providing an honest service were at one time used in an illegal activity that had nothing to do with you. Without knowledge, you had received dirty Bitcoins, and as a result, your accounts were closed. This could also be the reasoning of governments who wish to close exchanges for money laundering. This is why virgin Bitcoins or freshly mined Bitcoins sell between 10 to 20% higher than other Bitcoins, meaning that Bitcoin is not fungible and is a liability. The death of Bitcoin. Unfortunately, Bitcoin has failed in its original ideal as being peer-to-peer digital cash. Reality is dominated by mining monopolies who profit from middleman exchanges that demand your most personal identifiable information while lacking fungibility and therefore incur security risks. All this means that Bitcoin is not going to last, and once people realize that it's only a slightly improved version of fiat currencies, they will jump ship. The future of crypto in the face of technocracy. Technocracy is a resource-based economic system that uses energy credits as its accounting system. The philosophy of economics is a leading force behind globalism today and the green/climate change extremism/alarmism we see being pushed on the back of the created COVID-19 fiasco. You must recognize that the fiat system is designed to crash, and crash at will. This is why there is a global push by elites to secure land and energy producing resources. Expect to see supply and manufacturing shortages as the economy continues to plummet into the abyss. A cryptocurrency or token that expires and is subject to arbitrary scientific speculations of energy usage and resource production will most likely be the means of exchange in the final and global kingdom on earth spoken of in Daniel chapter 7 verses 23 to 28. The money in your bank account is simply devaluing every day by existing in the current fiat system and will inevitably become worthless in the face of a coming great reset. The goal is for energy production to become the new economy within a neo-feudal global government that utilizes technology and social credit systems to control individuals. China is the world's first technocratic state. The reason that Bitcoin is still around is because of its privacy vulnerabilities. The intelligence community surely love its open ledger and can monitor it as closely as any fiat currency with machine learning. In fact, in 1997, NSA members wrote an essay titled "How to Make a Mint, the Cryptocurrency of Anonymous Electronic Cash," and could have very well influenced the development of Bitcoin. It therefore provides no threat to the coming new economic order. The elimination of privacy with the implementation of mass surveillance is key to establishing a technocracy. Decentralized private property is biblical. The right to private property is inseparable from the right to privacy. Remove the ability to own anything and you remove your ability for privacy. Remove your ability for privacy and you remove the ability to possess anything. This is why the battle for internet privacy is in fact your battle to own anything on the internet. Thou shalt not steal, Exodus 20 verse 15, assumes a universal right to property and therefore privacy. Recognizing that the earth indeed belongs to God, Psalm 21:4, and humanity is simply a steward of the resources he has entrusted to us, 1 Peter 9, verses 9 to 11, we all have the right as the sons of Adam to possess private property and leave an inheritance for our children, Proverbs 13:22. How to secure your assets. Monero, XMR, is the only fully private cryptocurrency. It is therefore, in my opinion, the only cryptocurrency that actually has legs to stand against the coming clampdown on exchanges and crypto. Its privacy also makes it fully fungible and achieves what was the original goal of Bitcoin, a decentralized peer-to-peer digital cash system.
Monero is a secure, private, untraceable currency. Monero seeks to be electronic, private cash. It is open source, decentralized, and freely accessible to all. Monero transactions are always private. With Monero, others can't tell where you've received Monero from, where you've sent it to, or the amount involved. Not only does Monero's inherent untraceability help preserve your privacy, it also provides peace of mind, since you don't need to worry about how your Monero was used prior to it coming into your possession. Monero's privacy and fungibility make it true electronic cash. Monero uses a blockchain to securely record transactions. A blockchain is a digital ledger of transactions to which entries can only be added. In a blockchain, transactions are grouped into blocks which are linked together to compose a chain. A copy of the blockchain is simultaneously maintained by the majority of Monero network members. The blockchain secures transactions without the need for a central authority. But how does it achieve this? A block is a collection of payments submitted around the same time. Members of the Monero network, called miners, record payments into blocks. For a new block to be accepted by the network, it must follow a set of rules and come with a solution to a challenge determined by the previous block. That's where miners come in, by using their processing power to solve blocks. By design, it takes roughly 2 minutes to solve a block, regardless of how many miners are attempting. When a new block is added, the network rewards the winning miner with a scheduled amount of Monero. Any attempt to change a past block requires recomputing all subsequent blocks, which wastes the energy of anyone attempting it. This is how blockchain technology and the mining process ensure security of the network and control the mission of the currency. Now, let's explore how transactions work. Transactions are comprised of what are called inputs and outputs. The sum of a transaction's inputs will always equal the sum of its outputs. New outputs are created whenever someone sends Monero. Old outputs are consumed in the process by using them as inputs in the new transaction. In other words, a transaction is a transformation of Monero outputs belonging to one wallet into outputs belonging to another. For example, let's say Alice received a 10 Monero output and a 5 Monero output in the past, and she now wants to send 15 Monero to Bob. Alice's wallet will combine the 10 and 5 Monero outputs and send them to Bob, who will receive a 15 Monero output. Alice's wallet used her two outputs as inputs in the transaction which consumed them, and Bob's wallet received a brand new 15 Monero output. With the transaction, Alice also paid a small fee for miners to include her transaction in a block. Monero outputs are created in such a way that only the intended recipients are able to recognize and spend them. Your Monero wallet keeps track of the outputs on the blockchain that are owned by you, and only your wallet knows which are yours. You may, however, share a watch-only version of your wallet with whom you choose, which means they can view your balance but not spend your Monero. Your wallet is otherwise just like a bank account, reflecting the entire transaction history of deposits to it and payments from it. Let's discuss how you receive and control your Monero. All the Monero that is directed to your public address will be reflected in your wallet in the form of spendable outputs. All the unspent outputs in your wallet comprise your current balance. In our example, Alice sent Monero to Bob. Alice was able to send Monero from her wallet to Bob's wallet because Bob provided his wallet's public address to Alice. The public address can be thought of as a blueprint because it allows the sender to create outputs which only the intended recipient will be able to recognize as his and spend. Bob's wallet allows only Bob to detect and spend his Monero when he chooses. The wallet address itself never appears on the blockchain, so Bob's Monero are kept private. Now let's review and tie these concepts together. Monero is an electronic currency that allows you to safely and privately transact with whom you choose. The balance in your wallet is made up of unspent outputs. Inputs and outputs comprise a transaction. Transactions are grouped into blocks. Miners ensure that the blockchain can't be changed retroactively. The Monero blockchain is a secure, global, digital history of financial records shared by everyone on the network. While the blockchain is shared and open, there are mechanisms in place that obscure transaction information. Ring signatures obscure the true sender. Stealth addresses hide the receiver. Ring confidential transactions hide the amounts. Visit getmonero.org.
To learn more about Monero, I recommend reading Mastering Monero, the Future of Private Transactions. Link is in the show notes. If you have any questions about setting up wallets or mining Monero, I'll do my best to answer them in our Theonode's Discord server. I've personally been making the transition of my emergency savings into Monero and would recommend that you consider doing the same. The current fiat monetary system is also worshipped by many. By exiting it, you are in fact devaluing this idol in the minds of its beholders. By exiting or reducing your contact with this anti-Christ system, you are in reality weakening it and protesting against its unlawful use of fractional reserve lending, the means by which many have become enslaved. Ultimately, the weakness of Monero is the need for internet access. However, once your coins are on the blockchain, in your wallet, they can't be removed. If we get to a stage of lacking universal internet access through a fictitious cyber pandemic, I fear we will have greater challenges to think about. Once your watershed savings are secured in Monero, I would recommend investing in value-generating resources such as land, food-producing systems like livestock and agriculture, or skills, education to service others. These could all be used to barter should a global economic crash be looming on the horizon. I personally do not like the idea of investing in gold or silver, as it is difficult to transport and store, while also leaving you at the mercy of a third-party exchange. Listen to what Patrick Wood has to say about the value of money, and make sure to check out the show notes where we have a full interview with him about the topic of technocracy.
You know, I think even the bankers, maybe especially the bankers, whose expertise is money. That's their claim to fame. They don't make anything otherwise, but they know money. I'm sure they know money pretty well. And I have a feeling that the banking community globally understands that it was never, the way they were architecting it, was never meant to be permanent. And that somewhere along the way, there is an end to money as they know it. This is kind of hard to get your head around in a way, because you know, you want to say, well, why would somebody like Rockefeller be fighting to destroy capitalism? I mean, isn't that going to destroy him too? And you know, first of it, you think, well, it certainly would hurt him if he's figuring everything in terms of just money. And I'm sure the central bankers that, you know, people are operating as central banks, the banking families like the Rockefellers, like the Rothschilds and so on, I expect they have a different view of wealth than you and I would. From my perspective, you know, if I had $100,000 in the bank, well, it'd be great. You know, I say, well, I've got some padding, I've got some savings, whatever. And if I get in trouble, I can pull myself through. If I had a few million in the bank, it'd be even better. But money is not a store of, is people call it a store of value, but there is no value in money, you realize. Money can be declared obsolete tomorrow in a heartbeat. Your $1 million is just smoke. It can be burned up in an incinerator in about 5 minutes, and where's your money then? The real value of wealth historically has been in resources of the earth. Everything comes from the earth. All the gold, all the oil, all the, you know, the agricultural products, everything that we make has stuff that's taken out of the earth. The lumber that we use to build homes and fuel, you know, fires and stuff and so on around the world. Wood is still the most important fuel for burning, you know, for people to stay warm. And value and wealth is really rooted in the planet, in the earth. And my guess is these people understand this principle pretty well. So it's not just about making money, as we used to think, as Sutton and I thought back in the 70s and 80s. It's not just about making money, although they're making money and, you know, they're accumulating things along the way. They're certainly a big notch above where we stand. But in the end of it, if wealth is determined on control over resources, then the end game must be to control resources. Not necessarily just have the money, just take away the money and say who actually has their hand on the resources of the world. All around the world today, the United Nations and governments are gobbling up land at a breakneck speed. That's true in the United States. It's true with United Nations heritage designations that are being applied to tracts of land all over the world. The Bureau of Land Management is still gobbling up land like there's no tomorrow. The Nature Conservancy is gobbling up land and selling it to the BLM for a profit. You've got the Park Service, you know, setting land aside essentially under government control, closing off the gates so nobody can get into it, whatever. And people think, well, that's just for the sake of the environment. That's nonsense. is to save the resources for the, you know, to take the resources offline, to make the resources scarce, so that when the oligarchy, if you will, sets up that global trust one day, the resources of the world are going to be placed in that global trust for the common good. Here we're kind of back to Holons again, in a way. You know, you can't be trusted with private property because you would do selfish things. Well, you might cut down all the trees on your property or whatever. You might dig a water well that consumes too much water out of planet Earth, whatever. You can't be trusted with resources, but they can. So in the end of it, if you can picture the technocracy world of the future, energy will be controlled so that people must do what they have energy available to do. The resources of the world where everything is drawn out of will be licensed to people like you and I through a permit process where we might be able to scratch out a living on a corner of land somewhere as a farmer. We might be a miner. We might be an oil driller, whatever. And we may or may not get licenses to do anything. This is essentially like the feudal system in the Dark Ages, where the land barons owned everything and you had to squat on a piece of ground. If the guy liked you, he'd let you stay and farm out, maybe raise some hogs or something. And you'd give him 80% of what you made and you'd get the balance to keep your family alive if you could. This control over resources is clearly where everything is moving today. This is what sustainable development is all about. Twisting the resources out of the hands of the people and putting it into the hands of the elite. That's the scam in the simplest terms that I can describe. Getting the resources away from you and me and putting it into the hands of a global trust, trust organization. They never say who the trustees are going to be. History tells us exactly who it's going to be. It's going to be the people that set up the system. In other words, whoever implements technocracy is going to be the ones worthy to be the trustees of all the resources of the world.
Beware of covetousness. Lands can be taken off you through force, crops can fail, and health issues could destroy your ability to work. Ultimately, the only secure assets are those in heaven, and we should certainly set our affections there and obey our master to fulfill the Great Commission through the advancement of the gospel. Everything in this world is indeed sinking sand. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burnt up. Therefore, since all these things will be destroyed, what manner of persons ought you be in holy conduct and godliness? 2 Peter 3 verses 10 to 11. We are also called to be good stewards of the resources that we are entrusted with on the earth and to leave a legacy or inheritance for our children. Proverbs 13:22. So it is still important that while we tarry here, we consider helping others, as there very well might come a time when Christian communities will have to hold all things in common once again. Acts chapter 2 verses 44-45. What could you contribute to such a collective? But this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on even those who have wives should be as though they had none, those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 verses 29-31.